The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. I'm not sure if it was on the announcements, but also starting a week from Wednesday, so the 14th is the Introduction to Meditation course. Did I miss that, or was that not on there? Just for those of you who haven't taken it, it's a five-week course. It'll be offered on Wednesday night, 7:30 to 9. Introduction to Meditation. And I'll be teaching that with David Lurie. It's the same course that Gil teaches. So we'll be, I used to take that course. I've taken it many times. Every time I took it, I learned something new. So good evening. Happy 4th of July. I kind of was thinking that nobody would be here, that certainly, right, you know, fireworks or something would be more interesting. But today is Independence Day, when the United States signed the Declaration of Independence way back in 1776. And this idea that this inalienable right for life, liberty, and the pursuit of joy. I'm going to talk about joy today. I decided to talk about joy. After this morning, I went to the parade, the 4th of July parade this morning, and there was I had such a sense of delight just seeing so many different walks of life, so many different ages of people, so people doing all kinds of different things. They're just kind of a general celebration of the community. I couldn't help but be smiling and clapping, you know, as everybody goes by. It was fun, actually. It also reminded me that when I was young, I was on the swim team, and that was a big deal that we got to walk in the parade, right? We didn't do anything special. We just, you know, walked in the parade, and me and my friends. So I just had a lot of delight and kind of joy this morning, and I thought, oh, I'm going to talk about that tonight. So there are many types of joy. There can be some that's has just a little bubbly feeling to it, just a little bit of, you know, some excitement. And then there can be joy that's on the other end of the spectrum, this really rapturous experience. So in the Buddhist tradition, they make a distinction between joy and happiness. For a lot of things that I'm going to talk about tonight, we don't really have to be concerned with the difference. But in general, in the Buddhist, at least in this tradition, joy, the way that I think about it, is joy is like drinking a glass of champagne in celebration, right? It kind of has a bubbly quality, a vivality to it, as opposed to drinking a cup of tea, sitting down at the end of the evening, feeling all cozy with a cup of tea. That's maybe more like happiness, right? So happiness is more like a contentment, soothe, calm thing. And joy is more of an energetic, celebratory type of feeling. But we don't have to concern ourselves with, you know, exactly is this joy or is this happiness? But they make a distinction. So there can be a spectrum, something that's maybe just a little tinkling of joy, this rapturous joy, or maybe there's happiness. It's all joy, and it's all good. Not only is there a spectrum, but there can be just a moment of joy, just a sense, a little sense of delight, maybe seeing something, bringing something to mind, just a moment, as well as there can be long times of joy, of just feeling joyful, having that kind of bubbly feeling inside. I would argue that it also, those both have value, whether it's just a finger snap, a moment of it, or whether it's a lot of joy. I think joy is a good thing to pay attention to and to cultivate, whether it's for whatever duration it is and whatever intensity it is. So joy is talked about in the and this Buddhist tradition in a number of different ways, and it's a foundational part of practice towards liberation. And even if you're not interested in the liberation project or becoming awakened, joy is just as part of the human experience. I think all of us wish to have joy in our lives. So some of you may know there's the seven factors of awakening. Here at IMC, we're just finishing up a program, the seven factors of awakening. I know some of you in this room are in that program. And in these seven factors, as the name suggests, right, these are things that kind of support awakening. Seven items, joy is right in the middle. There's things that help support joy to arise. And then once joy has arisen, there's things that support other things to happen that then culminate in awakening. So it really is on part of the path here. Sometimes, I know when I first started practicing, I more had the idea that I was supposed to, this says something about me, right? I had this idea of like, you know, shut up and sit down and, you know, close your eyes and work hard. That was kind of my initial thinking. I didn't have this idea that there was happiness and joy to be cultivated and to be celebrated. But it's definitely on the path of practice. In fact, I would say that it's necessary to have a certain levity at some times. I'm not saying that you have to have this rapturous joy for hours on end. I'm saying that it needs to have a certain, like, I'm going like this, opening, this kind of softening of our hearts, that where there's a little bit of joy in there. So in these seven factors of awakening, I'm sure you've heard of the first three items are mindfulness, investigation, and energy. You know, just being present to what's happening. Investigation is bringing a little bit of curiosity to what's happening, and energy is to apply ourselves to that. Then after mindfulness, investigation, and energy, then joy just naturally arises. It's something that's it's not something that we have to make happen. It happens naturally after mindfulness, investigation, and energy. And then after joy, there's kind of after this bubbly, effervescent, that's the word I was looking for earlier, effervescent. After that experience, then there's a quieting down and there's tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And these more calm factors are help create the conditions in which awakening can happen. But joy is there in the center. There's another place where joy shows up. It's part of the path of practice. It shows up in all kinds of different settings. If you read some of the Buddhist stories, there you see this joy in all different places, but it's usually tucked in the middle of other factors. So not by itself necessarily, just like how we saw it in the seven factors of awakening. It's often also in this other cluster, which I call the gladness pentad, just lack of better words. And that starts with gladness, which leads to joy. Maybe this isn't surprising, it makes sense. Which then leads to tranquility, and then happiness and concentration. And then in different settings, that concentration then leads to awakening, or it can lead to some insights, or it can lead to a number of different things. And then how gladness arises is in different things cause that gladness initially to arise. Sometimes it's by doing virtuous behavior. Sometimes it's by being inspired by something, there's a certain gladness. And then joy arises. And then tranquility, happiness, concentration. And then some insights, and then awakening. That's not the only place where we see joy. It's also a harbinger of concentration. If you do mindfulness practice long enough, either long in terms of duration, hours, or long in terms of years, repeatedly, a certain amount of concentration is bound to happen. It's just if you can stay with being mindfulness and bringing your mind back to the breath or whatever your object is, concentration is bound to happen. And a sign of concentration is joy. There's this levity in the heart, this kind of spaciousness, a certain amount of letting go. Sometimes it can be this really kind of rapturous feeling with waves of rapture, and sometimes it's just very subtle, this little tingling, bubbly sense of well-being, a nice feeling. So that's a signal of becoming concentrated, is joy. And also when you become absorbed in this kind of like these first levels of concentration, joy is definitely a part of them too. So it's definitely a joyous experience when we can settle down and then become concentrated. So then, as if that weren't enough, there's yet one more area in which joy shows up, and maybe many of you are familiar with this, and that is with the Brahma-Vihara practices, sympathetic joy. That is that when we see other people having joy, it just makes us feel joyful too. And this is a practice that we can intentionally cultivate, often by saying phrases, just like we do with loving kindness. For those of you who are familiar with loving kindness or compassion, we have loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. This group of four are the Brahma Viharas. And we can specifically cultivate them often by repeating phrases in the mind. A little bit different than mindfulness practices. With these practices, we're saying something over and over in our mind. And sympathetic joy, the way that I think about it, is when we are practicing metta, loving kindness, and we're practicing loving kindness towards other people, and when our sense of loving kindness meets an individual that is experiencing joy, they have some good fortune in their life, then our loving kindness gets converted into what we call sympathetic joy, that it gets converted into joy ourselves. Right? If you love somebody, or even care for somebody, when something good happens for them, you feel happy. You feel good too. So to help cultivate this, the phrases are often like, may your good fortune continue. So you bring to mind somebody who is having some good fortune, either somebody you know or something that you imagine, and you can repeat, may your good fortune continue. And just delight in their delight. There's enough joy to go around, right? Just because they're having joy doesn't mean that we can't. So those are, four different ways in which joy is part of the Buddhist practice. It's part of the seven factors of awakening. It's part of this gladness pentad. I didn't mention that this gladness pentad is also part of this bigger chain, sometimes called the liberative dependent origination, which is a complicated word, complicated title, which means that things arise from cause and effect. And starting with faith, we can run through all kinds of things. And faith, I should say, is faith in the awakening of the Buddha. It's not faith like in a theist religion. It's not faith in a creator God. It's faith that things can change, faith that things can be different, faith that awakening is possible, faith in the teacher, faith in yourself. Starts with faith and ends with awakening, and joy is part of that path too. It's part of this, what I'm calling the gladness pentad. Okay, so if you believe me that joy is there as part of this this Buddhist thing, then how do we cultivate it? I talked a little bit about how to do it with sympathetic joy, but how else can we do this? And even if we weren't Buddhists or sitting here in a Buddhist center, joy is just a good thing to have in one's life. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter what beliefs you have. So joy, like everything else, arises out of conditions, right? There are causes and conditions that cause joy to arise. And joy can arise naturally. We don't have to make it happen. It is not a big, giant project that we have to strive and work towards and, you know, suffer for. Instead, we just create the conditions. We help kind of create some of the causes, and then joy will arise on its own. We just have to give it an opportunity to. We just have to, till the soil and so that it can sprout. So what are some of these things that we can do to cultivate joy besides going to a 4th of July parade in the morning? 4th of July is only once a year. Well, it turns out that a mindfulness practice can support joy. When we start to become more mindful, and we're bringing our awareness back to the breath or whatever the object is, then we're spending less time, maybe in the beginning it's not a whole lot less, but it is less, then we're spending less time spinning out, being lost in our stories, maybe having our mind filled with unwholesome thoughts or things that don't support or that don't support joy or that prevent joy are less prevalent. Partly because we're being mindful and we're spending time being on the breath or being in the present moment. And when we're doing that, we're not doing those things that prevent joy. That's part of creating the conditions for joy to arise. You can notice that, right, this is a small thing. This is a subtle thing. But earlier I was saying that joy has value, whether it's just for a moment, and it's just a tiny little sprinkling of joy, as well as whether it's a big, giant expression of it. All of it has value. And all of us can help us and support us in our life. So we start with simple things. We start with where we are. We don't start with this grand project. Things have to be different in order for there to be joy. Instead, we notice that, okay, when I'm mindful, I'm not doing some of these other things that can prevent joy. And often when we're mindful, we can notice there's a softening of the heart. There's maybe a freshness or a... I'll stick with this word, softness, that happens, right? Maybe a little bit less contraction and a little soft opening. And that's part of the creating the conditions for joy. Also, with mindfulness practice, we're more likely to see the big picture of what's happening and not get caught up on just the terrible thing that's happening or the uncomfortable thing that's happening or that thing that doesn't match our preferences. Excuse me here. With mindfulness practice, I don't want to. Sorry if I didn't quite get the mute button right at the right time. With mindfulness practice, we're more likely to see the big picture. It turns out it makes sense that human beings, we evolved with a negativity bias, right? We're more likely to survive saber-toothed tigers if we're always on the lookout for saber-toothed tigers and remember where saber-toothed tigers are and think about what saber-toothed tigers may want to think. So, of course, we tend to be a little bit more attuned to things that aren't positive, to help for our safety. But when we start with a mindfulness practice, you start to be able to see, to maybe relax a little bit more into the present moment and to see, oh, there's more than just maybe that negative thing that's happening. There's also some things that are neutral, and there's also some things that are positive, very often, right, happening at the same time. So seeing this can help our cultivate joy, too, is to, again, not get swept away with just the things that are negative and that prevent joy from arising. Another thing that happens with a mindfulness practice is we start to see some of our habits of mind. And we start to recognize them like, oh, right, here I go again. It doesn't mean that we can always stop ourselves from going down a certain thought pattern or going down a path. But they start to have a little bit less power over us if we can see, oh, yep, here we go. I have this one thing that it's a little bit pernicious. It shows up a lot. I try not to believe it when it does. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I fall for it. But I have this idea that like, oh, I'm failing. It doesn't matter what I'm doing, but I'm often thinking like, oh, I'm failing. It's not good enough. It's not right. It's not enough. I don't know. It's this story that happens. But with mindfulness practice, I could start to see like, oh yeah, this is a habit I have. I haven't been able to completely drop it, but I'm no longer quite as swept away by it and believe it. And so the more that we can see our habits of minds, our proclivities, our propensities, the ways that our minds work, either through, who knows where these things come from, right? I mean, there's lots of theories, but it's we have them. We have things that we do. And with a mindfulness practice, we can recognize them. And when we can recognize them, then we are less likely to be swept away by them. And then something different can come in. And maybe some of those something different that can come in can be part of creating the conditions for joy. So in addition to just having a mindfulness practice, we can create conditions that will help support joy to arise. And some is to just create, even if it's just for a moment, some inner ease, some inner calm, some inner peace. And that can be as simple as just watching a single breath, right? It's part of mindfulness practice. It can be with a certain intentness and a certain gentleness, watching a breath, a certain focus with gentleness, like a way that you would watch a baby or an infant, or a way that your puppy looks at you, or a horse may look at you, or another pet may look at you, right? So a gentleness, but with a focus. And in that manner, if we can bring just to a single breath, and that single breath, there can be some calm. There can be some ease. It doesn't mean that there aren't things out there that are not what we wish, but in that moment, there can be a little bit of calm. And inner joy relies on just a little bit of inner calm. It doesn't have to have a whole lot, just a little bit. And we can have a little bit just by paying attention to our breath. And when our mind slips off and goes into other things, then we can bring our mind back with a certain gentleness and focus. And if you had to choose between one, between focus and gentleness, then choose gentleness. To kind of pay attention to the way that we're breathing. And this way, there's like this momentary relief from some of our afflictions. I'll use that word. But it could maybe be some debilitating afflictions, depression, despair, hatred, maybe a lot of anger. Maybe we can get a small respite in that one breath away from them. There's also non-debilitating afflictions, worry, remorse, maybe some greed or some fear. That single breath, if we can maybe let those calm. But there's also really subtle things that kind of get in the way. Things like a low-level restlessness or agitation. This kind of quiet voice we often have in the back of our minds saying, this isn't quite good enough. If we can just bring some focus and gentleness to a single breath, in that single breath, there can be some ease. And that can help create the conditions for some joy. Something else that can help create the conditions is to try to have a little bit of ease with yourself. There's always something that's happening, right? All the time. There's our experience that's happening, and then there's our relationship to what's happening. And can we have our relationship to what's happening not be some self-recrimination? Just see if we can soften that a little bit, some ease. I'm not asking us to change lifetimes of habits here. I'm talking about subtle things. And this means that if you're going through a trying period, maybe you can't find that ease with the breath, then you can give yourself permission to be feeling what you're feeling. And just be authentic and just be honest. I feel like hell right now. And just that bit of authenticity, just being with what is, inside there is a little bit of ease, can be a little bit of ease. So just to, I'm not saying that we have to fabricate these sense of well-being when there isn't a sense of well-being, but our attitude towards this sense of well-being can be one of, if when we're not feeling well, there can be maybe some acceptance towards that. And in that, there can be a little bit of ease. So then we cultivate ease. If we're feeling well, and if we're not feeling well, see if we can have ease with not feeling well. And then we incline the mind towards joy. One of the ways to incline the mind towards joy is to notice, when does joy arise? We do have small little moments of happiness, joy, well-being in our lives. May not be our predominant experience. Maybe sometimes it is. But this was a kind of a big wake-up call for me when I was on retreat and the meditation teacher was leading a guided meditation and was saying, look for some joy. And I wasn't feeling joy. I was in like some physical pain. And the meditation teacher said, it doesn't have to be your dominant experience, but is there just a little flicker of some well-being? That was like fantastic for me. It's like, oh, right. I am uncomfortable sitting here. My knee hurts. But there is actually, you know, kind of like in this corner of my mind, a certain amount of ease, or maybe joy was too strong of a word, but just to acknowledge that more than one thing is happening at a time. And to acknowledge that we can choose to bring our attention to those things that are maybe have some well-being, some joy, some happiness. So we can incline our mind towards joy. The more the mind becomes familiar with joy, the more it perceives joy, then it becomes more, it's more likely to arise. I think all of us have this experience, that those things that we do a lot, then we're just easier to do again. So when we notice when joy just naturally arises, whether it's for a moment, whether if it's a long time, whether it's rapture or whether it's a tiny little tingle, to really notice it. And this is more than just, this feels good, but more to like, oh, how does this feel in the body? How does this feel in the mind? Can you explore with curiosity this landscape of well-being? And maybe it's just a little bit of landscape, one corner of the garden. Maybe it's your entire experience. But can you just explore that? What does it feel like? What is it like? So that when you're in the middle of an enjoyable moment, don't miss it. Right? These little things do happen sometimes. Maybe it's the joy of like, oh, finally, I made it to the front of the line, and now I'm the one that's going, my groceries are being checked out, that kind of relief, or I don't know, right? There's all kinds of small little moments. There's no reason to miss them. It makes it more likely that the mind will be inclined to do that, so that when you do have an opportunity to have a little bit of calmness, If you incline the mind towards joy, it'll arise more easily and more often. We don't have to make it happen. We're just creating the conditions. And part of the conditions is to notice when it does arise. And a third thing that we can do is do things that uplift the mind, uplift our life, uplift our hearts. This may be different for different people at different times. Some examples are being generous, right? There's so many different ways to be generous, to listen to somebody who really is feeling upset and really wants to say something. Maybe they have to say it over and over and over again, but generously listening to them, giving your time to help. Maybe you have some expertise, maybe you have some skill, maybe you just have some time, but giving time to some people that could use it. Acting with integrity. There's a certain joyfulness about that, about, you know, maybe joy is too strong a word. Maybe it just uplifts the mind to act with integrity, to do what you think is right. When the cashier accidentally gives you that extra $5 bill, to say, oh no, actually, I only gave you, or I don't know how that would work, but to correct them and give it back, you know, these small little things, like to tell the truth, even though it may mean that you have to pay more or something like this. I don't know. Being kind, right? Just being kind to others kind of uplifts the heart and the mind. Holding the door, holding the elevator, taking the shopping cart back to where the shopping carts hang out there in the parking lot or something like this. These are all simple things you'll notice that I'm talking about, right? These are small, simple things that don't take extra time necessarily. Some of them do. But that we can, kind of things to uplift the mind. And then when our mind is a little bit uplifted, then it can be a little bit more stable. And then when it's a little bit more stable, it's easier to be a little bit more calm. When it's a little bit more calm, it's a little bit easier to be mindful. When you're easier to be mindful, it's easier to notice how there are pleasant things happening, right? You can see how all these things support one of them. So I don't want to give the impression that this practice is only about cultivating positive states, right? I don't want to say that, oh, cultivate joy and, you know, ignore everything else in your life, and, right? Because that's, well, I did say that joy is conditional. One of the conditions for joy is being inauthentic, trying to pretend things aren't there when they really are there. But instead, this practice is to meet what is arising, what we're experiencing, and to be honest about it, meet it with as much integrity as we can, in the best way that we can, and to cultivate positive mental states. And when there aren't positive mental states, to notice that and see if we can bring some ease towards that. Yes, this is suffering right now. And see if we can bring some ease to noticing that there is suffering. It's really uncomfortable. This is exactly what I didn't want, and it's happening. So there can be a certain amount of ease, or maybe ease is too strong a word, but there's something that happens, maybe spaciousness, when we are actually meet things as they are. And then I also want to say that, okay, I've talked about cultivating joy. You can create some calm. You can incline the mind. And you can uplift the mind. But all of us know that even though we may have the best intentions, that doesn't mean that what we intend to do can happen. How many times have we all said, okay, I'm going to start eating better. I'm going to exercise more. I'm going to sleep more. I'm going to meditate more, right? All these things, right? That we say that we're going to do. So even though we may have really sincere intentions and want our lives to be happier and healthier, it doesn't always happen. There can be some old habits that get in the way, that can kind of sabotage our best efforts for all of our good intentions. And it can be frustrating when we're trying to create the conditions for joy to arise and joy isn't arising, or maybe we can't even create the conditions for joy to arise. But it's very helpful to understand this dynamic of wanting something to do something and yet not being able to do it. This dynamic of maybe feeling frustrated or watching ourselves doing exactly what we know isn't very helpful, but we're doing it anyway. So we can bring wisdom and compassion to ourselves and to this dynamic when we find ourselves doing that which doesn't support joy or these other things that support our lives. So when we see ourselves fall into these old patterns, these old habits, I shared that one of mine is kind of feeling like I'm failing. It's quite astounding how often that comes up. Doesn't matter what's happening, this kind of old habit of mine. Is to, rather than feeling frustrated, instead feel some solace that, oh, I notice. I notice that there's this thought that's happening or that I'm behaving in this way. Because there, not always, but this is how it starts, there can be a choice. Oh, am I going to believe this? Am I going to follow this down into something that doesn't support me? Or am I going to try to get back on track? If we can see ourselves doing this, it's uncomfortable to see ourselves doing that, which is not what we wish we weren't doing, getting that second cookie or whatever it might be. But if we can have a little bit of, maybe a little bit of spaciousness, like, oh, okay, well, at least I noticed. This is how it starts, right? And then be very kind to yourself. Everybody has this. This is part of the human experience of these habits of self-sabotage, if I can use that language, of having our old habits that maybe don't serve us in this situation, but we're doing it anyway. And understand that they're just a habit of mind. Doesn't mean that you as a person are this way. You will forever be this way. You have forever have been that way. It just means it's a habit of mind. We can make new habits. I'm sure you all have made new habits. We're in a drought in California. I've developed some new habits. Probably you guys have too. How I wash the dishes, how I do the laundry, some of the things, how often I wash my car, right? These are things that are just things that I changed in my life because we're in a drought and we all have to do this. So just like that, these small, we can make changes. So just to recognize that things are habits of mine and we can make new habits. And then when we recognize it, to also bring compassion to ourselves, this self-compassion, and to recognize that, yes, we're doing the best that we can. At this moment, we're doing the best that we can. Maybe other moments we can do better. Maybe other moments we've done worse. This moment, right here, we're doing the best that we can. And maybe with that idea that, okay, I'm doing the best that I can, but that certain spaciousness, recognizing that I've noticed that I have this behavior that's one that I wish that I didn't do or maybe isn't supporting me, cultivating joy or whatever else. Maybe you could also say, well, I'm in the process of learning something new, and this is how you learn something new. It takes time. So this idea of self-compassion, there's a lot of ideas that we can have about self-compassion, including this idea like, oh, that's for sissies, or that it's self-indulgent. It's selfish, and it undermines your effectiveness, like this idea of saying to yourself, like, oh, okay, you're suffering right now, but you're doing the best that you can. There is so much research that is happening right now. It's quite astounding, actually, in the past 5 years, I predict, you know, how mindfulness, many of you may know that mindfulness is really, you know, it's being taught in schools. You can take mindfulness courses at Kaiser and the different Palo Alto Medical Foundation. You know, all these doctors have mindfulness classes. I predict in 5 or 10 years will be self-compassion classes. Self-compassion turns out to be enormously powerful. It really supports people. And here's one way. It's a whole other talk about self-compassion. I'll just say this one thing. If you have self-compassion, that when you make a mistake, you acknowledge it, you feel it, you notice it, and then you think about, oh, what can I do differently? Then you pick up and you try again. You're more likely to try again. If you, instead of beating yourself up, this inner cattle prod that we often have, it turns out those people who treat themselves with some compassion are more likely to try things repeatedly and become more successful and be more kind to other people and have more courage because they're not as afraid of failure, all these kinds of things. So today I wanted to talk about joy. Joy is part of the Buddhist practice. It's an integral part. It's in the middle of all kinds of things that lead to awakening. But even if I weren't in part of the Buddhist practice, joy is just a nice thing to have. And I talked about there's a few ways to cultivate joy. One, just mindfulness practice its own helps create the conditions for joy. But also we can kind of do some calm, maybe with a single breath, can incline the mind towards joy. Notice when good feelings happen. Don't miss them. Really, what are the sounds? What are the smells? What are the feelings associated with them when you have a sense of well-being? And then we can uplift the mind, do things like be generous, be kind, be helpful, act with integrity, and then it'll be more likely that joy will arise. And then if it doesn't arise, we find that we're undermining our efforts or we're doing some self-sabotage, and we can recognize this is part of the human experience also, and maybe we can have some compassion for ourselves and bring some wisdom to notice that it doesn't mean that you can never undo those habits of mind and create new ones. It just means that at that moment, that's what you're experiencing. So with that, I would like to wish you a joyful rest of the evening and a safe one, and for all of the entire summer. So thank you very much. And I'm happy to stay up here if anybody has some questions or comments. Thank you.